Okay, I think I've got it this time. I apologize, everybody. Just checking, Todd, can you hear me?
Let's check, yeah.
Okay, good. Good. So all the meeting settings had changed to some weird defaults, which is why we were having problems. Just waiting for a couple of our guests to join. Okay, we're back online. Sorry, so we just have to roll this back. Welcome to the Netherland Fire Protection District Board of Directors regular meeting, July the 1st, 2020. A roll call for the board, please. So Ian Owen Powell, I'm present. Patrick Richardson.
Present.
Todd Weisler.
Present.
Ray Willis. And you're muted, Ray.
Ray Willis is still muted.
Present.
Maybe. Yes, you are. You're present. Henry Zevrig.
Here.
And Chief Doe.
Here.
So we will call the meeting to order at 19:12 now. Now we have a quorum of the board. All the board members are present. We also have a few guests on currently as well. Always nice to see. So first order of business is to approve the meeting agenda. The only changes I made to the agenda that I mailed out was I just added responsibilities. Who's probably going to talk about the pieces in here. So can I have a motion to approve the meeting agenda, please?
So moved.
Second.
Okay. The meeting agenda is approved as written. Next order of business is the acceptance of the June 3rd meeting minutes that I mailed out earlier this week. Did anybody have any comments on those?
Not on my side.
No, okay. So I'm not screen sharing. Okay, just checking you can all see my screen at the moment with the agenda on it.
Correct.
Okay, good. Thank you. Just technology trauma this evening. So the only unusual thing in the meeting minutes was I think we ended up with the wrong figures on the meeting. Jim corrected those in the minutes and we made a note of the corrections there. Other than that, if nobody has any other objections, can I get a motion to approve the minutes as written?
So moved.
Okay, and a second, please.
A second.
Okay. Right. So moving on, we do have some members of the public present. I know that most of you are fire department, but if anybody has any public comment that they'd like to bring to the board, please do. Just one note. There's been a change of policy within the town for public comments that you don't need to state your address. I believe that the Board of Trustees found that some people who were making public comment were being targeted. So people coming around their address and threatening them. So they changed their policy and I've aligned our policy to the same. So basically you just need to state your name and whether you're in or out of district for the record. So on that note, does anybody in the public have any comments they'd like to make at this point? Okay, I will take that as no comments at this time. There's an opportunity later in the meeting, so at the end, if anybody comes up with any comments that they'd like to make with the board, you can also message me if anything comes up while we're discussing things and you'd like to talk about. One second, and I'll pull up the treasurer's report, and then I'll hand off to Todd for a couple of minutes.
Right.
Go for it, Todd.
So I'm gonna just state, this is how the numbers are reported to us, and we're gonna go back through this and make some adjustments for the month and do some work on how the numbers are being reported. But as far as our savings are concerned, we have $605,111 in savings, $16,873 in checking, and $24,675 in capital reserve for a total of funds of $646,660. We have a reserve balance of $316,561. And we have outstanding expenses of $20,347. So our total unreserved funds is $309,752. The changes we'd like to go back and look at is the grant match reserve. We think that should be around $72,000. And then our total income for this month, we've got a later reporting as of when Kathy sent this out, and it should be more in the order of $183,000 versus about the $87,000 that was being reported. So we'll go back and take a look at this, and Ian's going to go through another reporting that he has worked up, and that will be the new format that we'll go through on a monthly basis.
Thanks, Todd. I showed this last month as well. Basically, I'm just trying to simplify the view of our overall income and expenses. This may not look simplified, but it's simpler to me, and I'll switch to another sheet in a second that's a bit more graphical. But basically, it just allows us to track month to month what we're seeing a little bit easier in the figures that Kathy sends us each month. One of the minor concerns that I had is just the timing that in which the numbers are reported. So the numbers we're seeing in the income and expense sheet and the general fund, I believe, were cut on the 20th of last month. So there's basically a third of the month that we're not really seeing the true picture. And Todd and I are going to discuss that with Kathy, how we can make that a little bit more transparent, and then hopefully it'll translate into this sheet. To her, it shouldn't make any difference, but we can just transfer her figures into this sheet, and it just makes it a little bit easier to read. The big point about this format, just wait for my computer to catch up. So I've been working on just producing a little bit more graphical content to give us a better idea of where we stand in the months and in the year as we're going along. So starting at the top here, this is our as reported income budget versus actual for each month. So in blue is the amount we budgeted and we anticipated. Orange is the actual. So relatively we're kind of tracking. Most months we're coming in a little bit over, which is nice. These numbers have been updated with the income numbers that I received today from Jim from the county for our property taxes. So that is actually up to date in terms of income. So our income budget versus actual accrual, so across the year, we are currently seeing more than we budgeted for, which is good. I was kind of worried that COVID was going to affect the property tax income and slow that down. It doesn't seem to have done yet. I wouldn't be surprised if we see this trend tail off towards the end of the year. I know it will do anyway, but it's going to be interesting to see if COVID has an effect on that. And obviously that will affect our spending projections towards the end of the year. In terms of expenses, we are running under budget every month on expenses, which is great. I know we have some outstanding expenses that are going to change this a little bit from the last month, but currently as of the 20th, we were about $16,000 or $14,000 under budget. And generally throughout the year, that trend has continued. And you can see that here. So basically our expenses, budget versus actual accrual, we're running pretty nicely under budget at the moment. The thing about the budget is that it's created for the entire year, and some of the items that are on that budget occur in lump sums in the later in the year. So we can't really account for that just yet. Is another thing that I want to talk to Kathy about is just getting some projections about when the large numbers come in, or when we do lump sum payments. So currently, based on what we've spent this year so far, we're predicting, or I'm predicting, about $801,325 expenses this year, which is should be under budget. Our budget was $992. Obviously, this is a prediction, so there's no guarantee. That's our maximum predicted. And then based on our average spend, $762,629. Again, these are purely predictions, and the aim of this is to allow us to see how we're spending, see our income, and if we need to make adjustments, we can make adjustments accordingly. Quick visual view, expenses versus budget to date. We're running under budget, like I said. So we're running about $78,685 under budget as of the numbers that were reported. Based on our annual budget, we have currently spent $381,000 and we have $538,685 still budgeted to spend. And then the final one, and you can argue the wording on this. So the budgeted versus committed versus discretionary. So discretionary, I basically took as everything else that we don't need, everything that we don't need to keep the lights on and the doors open. So basically like payroll, all the utility bills, insurance, all our legal fees, things like that. So that's basically either budgeted or committed funds. So this year so far we've expensed $381,314. We have another $389,000 committed, and based on the budget, we have a remaining $221,632 in the budget, assuming we get all our property taxes. So that just gives us a better view of financially where we are. Any questions, comments?
Ian, it's Rick.
Changes. Hey, Rick.
Hey, can I provide some commentary on the grant match reserve?
Yes, please.
So for clarity, that was carryover from 19 budget to pay for the district's share of the expenses towards the extrication tool grant. And so that was so that that number didn't end up just as cash showing up as unreserved. And so then that other $72,000 is in the existing general operating budget for the year.
Right. Okay.
So as we make that extrication tool payment, and I believe we've made that last one, typically I go ahead and ask Kathy to go ahead and reduce that by the amount that we've spent.
I understand. That makes things make a lot more sense in terms of the other numbers in the budget.
Okay.
So then we still have the 72,000 that's in the budget for grant match expenses. That just doesn't show up in the reserved funds. So that's basically that's just in our operating budget. Fine. Excellent. Thank you. I appreciate that. Oh, this is a work in progress. So we're just trying to get the numbers to all line up and obviously, like I say, just give us a better idea of where we are. I can make Excel now not be my full window. That's fine. Okay, any other comments on the treasurer's report and funding and budget so far?
Ian, I had a chance to look at the city card statements. Are we actually looking at receipts and getting receipts, itemized receipts? So I didn't go through and itemize all of those. But I'm curious, and I just don't understand who or what service this is. Who's Thomas G. Goldkamp, and what service is he providing? What is that exactly? Chief, are you familiar with this?
Yeah, that's the company that Lindsay works for, and they're the ones providing us the goggles and masks for COVID.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
And then, go ahead, Ian. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, Patrick, I haven't had a chance to look at these yet. I know I sent these out. Kind of busy with some other things this week, so
sure.
Go on.
And then just for the, let's see, the month of June, on 5/9, there's a charge at Office Depot in Boulder for $92.99. There's another charge on 5/14 for $77.99. I'd imagine the same trip down there in 5/14 for $155.98. One thing, it's just a lot of driving down to Boulder for something could probably be ordered online and delivered, but so that's a fair amount of time wasted. But what was being purchased on at least two trips?
Pat, I don't have those specifics in front of me, but most likely those are toner cartridges, and typically that happens when we suddenly are out of toner and needing to print stuff.
So 5/9 and then a trip on 5/14 toner cartridges?
As far as I know.
Can you start producing receipts for these trips? Because I was also looking at on 5/20, another trip down to Boulder, a trip to Costco for $16.99. What would you suspect that may have been?
Good golly.
Yeah, it's kind of an odd number, very small number for a trip to Costco. And then again on 5/29, another trip down the hill to Costco for $34.08. So that's why I was kind of piqued my interest. And that was for the month of June. So then I got interested and started looking at May and you know, there's similar trips to Costco for $42, one to Target for $16.83, another trip to Costco for $559.94, and then this is an oddball one, Street Rod Manufacturing Company for $346.10. Any ideas that?
So I would imagine the Street Rod Manufacturing is the brake retrofit for $56.20 for new calipers.
Okay.
And then the trips to Costco typically are tail ended onto something else. And so I happen to know we got some Wildland fire snacks at Costco. But again, Kathy gets all those receipts to itemize them. But specifically, if you're just asking me off the top of my head, I can't tell you every receipt.
So you're not required to bring those back with you or bring an item?
No, I do.
Okay. I'd like to see, because $560 worth of snacks is a bit excessive, don't you think?
I don't believe that's snacks.
Okay. That's why I'd like
so
to
what's
figure
the
out
date on that?
That was 4:30.
So that 4:30, that should be the three storage units for station two. And they're 159 apiece, as I recall, two extension cords and shop towels or something like that.
Okay. And then on the same statement for May, it looks like it hasn't happened in June, but Jim's got $139 worth of food at the deli twice and then the mine shaft.
So I don't know if that's occurring on training. I think probably some of that is the election expenses for the judges to buy them lunch.
Hmm. Okay. Well, that was a charge on 5/5/5/6.
That would be the date of the election count.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I guess what I'm saying is I'd sure like to see itemized receipts, because there's other charges here. I'm trying to figure out the Target charge and what we would be using from Target. I'm sure there's something there that we could certainly be using, but it would clear up a lot of my questions if we started seeing itemized receipts for purchases. So I'm asking for them.
Pat, you're broken. I'm sorry. I heard you're asking for them.
So
Kathy's getting all those, and those are all in our records. I don't know how, if you want us to scan every receipt and send it to you.
Please do.
Okay.
I don't mind coming by and picking up just hard copies, but I can tell you that when I use my Citi credit card, I produce a receipt, I produce a purchase order, and I make sure that I identify which account it's supposed to come out of. I'm sure you're doing that, but like I said, there's a few things here that certainly piqued my interest that made me wonder. 321 BNF Superfood for $72. We have, once again, Costco for 163, and this is back in April. It just seems like there's a lot of, number one, down the hill seems inefficient. A lot of this can be ordered online, and I know that Amazon probably would deliver to you. And then more Costco for $16.99. So like I said, it, forgive me for being interested in what's going on, but I am. I don't understand all the small purchases and trips down the hill.
Okay.
So that's all I had. That was my question about the Citibank statements.
Okay, so Patrick, moving forward, would you like to see purchase orders for all the purchases made on the credit card? Is that what you're saying?
Well, I want to see actual itemized receipts that are produced at the place of purchase. And then and I get it, one trip, you might buy something to build part of the brush truck, and that's a separate purchase. So we can certainly put that to a very specific account, which would be building 5631, hypothetically. And so we need to charge that account. And then if you're also at the same time buying office supplies, well, then that goes into our administrative account. And so we can track this down and be able to explain what the purchases are and where the money should be pulled out of each account, if that makes sense.
It does to me.
Because quite honestly, right now, I mean, $550 some odd of shelves, okay, that's fine. But until I see it, I don't know 100% that that's what it is.
Okay. Chief, you and I can get together and discuss that in our regular meetings and work out how we present that. Okay. And we can discuss that with Kathy as well about how we're going to do that. Any other comments on Treasurer's report and spending? Okay, let's move on. Chief's report, please.
We have 175 calls to date. That's 37 since the last report. We had a fairly prolonged CPR with a poor outcome. And so a number of folks pretty sad about that. We had a pediatric chopper go. We had a motorcycle down the embankment. We had a backcountry medical up at 4th of July. And then just a lot of routine illegal campfires, medical calls, business as usual. Ian, I'm going to apologize because I have a fair number of things intermixed that are in your new business, but if you'll bear with me, just let me get through this stuff. Keter has come through and done the DOTs as well as identified various other things that we need to work on. 5601 is currently down at their shop getting an axle seal and a wheel bearing. The pump and the valves are done. We swapped the radio on the ATV versus the one for 5624. 5623 is ready for donation to Indian Peaks. Our HOTSA unit went in for repair and I picked that back up today. 5653 now has a new brake issue and is scheduled to go to the mechanic today, but they couldn't get it in. Dan and I are continuing to work on programming of the 800-5653 now has a new schedule. N95 masks and what the right ones are and what the supply chain delivery dates are. And so there's a number of people I'm working on with that. We've provided input to the we're continuing to negotiate 95 masks on the Big Springs egress to go ahead and move forward with what we're going to call the JVA switchback proposal. And so they're looking at that, and then we will incorporate that in public process, so public and Boulder County Parks and Open Space can comment on that. The daily activity plan for our shift officers, as well as an apparatus spreadsheet and a station chores information was sent to our shift officers. And once Charlie's back from vacation, the goal is to nail that down and have a discussion of that next week. Lieutenant Vanolo reworked our volunteer shift, which volunteers are assigned to our shift officers. And that may still require a little bit of fine tuning, but he's got some traction on that. We took delivery of our last, EMS extrication tool and Ryan completed the paperwork for that. We're scheduled for, the manufacturer to come up and give us a demo on July, Lieutenant Vanolo 11th. We received notification from one of our vendors yesterday that we were successful in our EMS grant towards defibrillator replacement. That'll take some number of months for the state to get us paperwork and a work order. And so we likely won't be ordering those until at least September. Our brush truck went to Gilpin County for their wildland. We received notifications yesterday that we and paperwork has been submitted to Boulder County, and we're waiting for them to make an appointment for the physical inspection. Concurrent with that, we completed some body work on 5622. 5630, which is the old brush truck, is being went to Gilpin County used to transport our ATVs. We had somewhat of a protracted call up at West Mag, and we're requested to bring some ATVs in the area. So we're putting a winch up on that to help load the ATVs. And so that's one of the current projects. And then I followed up with IS 30, which is the old brush truck, transport our ATVs. We had somewhat of a protracted, and we're requested to bring some ATVs, putting a winch up on that to help load the future. But it may still be months until they come out with a refined number on that. And then I sent you a copy of Rick Henriksen's, may still be months until they come out with, and then I sent you a proposal for adoption of the 2018 fire codes and the appropriate amendments. And I just wanted to get that back on the board's radar, that that's one of the things that we've committed to ISO, is that we're going to get within, you know, striking range of current fire code. And so we need to adopt those at the district level. And then we'll continue to work with town to get them adopted at the town level. That's the gist of that.
Just quickly. So you broke up a little bit for me. Your last thing you're talking about was the ISO ratings. Is that right?
That's correct.
And then the resubmission of the water supply calculations to them.
Correct. And okay. That came back pretty favorable. Okay. So I'm pretty excited to see where those numbers land. And the most important thing I think for us at the time, you know, is for us to finalize adoption of 2018 fire code. And then town didn't get many hydrants tested last year. And so Rick Henriksen is going to coordinate with town and see how we can help them get some more hydrants tested this year.
Okay. That was going to be a question I was going to ask you on that one. So in order for us to adopt the 2015 building codes, what do we need to do as the board?
18. Probably put 18. It as an agenda item on our next meeting. And I will post the proposed amendments up on our website. Okay. And so it takes a resolution out of the board of directors, but then subsequent to that, it goes to the County Fire Code Review Committee, which Henriksen happens to sit on, but it has to go through an additional process where it's functionally ratified by the county commissioners.
Okay. Right, and then that just brings us in line with the expectations of ISO for building codes, correct?
Correct.
And just so everybody else knows, I'm not showing off, I've been doing some very exciting reading about ISO just recently. I've managed to learn an awful lot of stuff in the last 2 weeks about ISO that I never thought I'd need to know. Some from Chief, some from a lovely book you gave me, and some from our last ISO report. So. One thing, and I know we have some members on this meeting, one thing to note that one of the important factors in ISO, there's two really important factors that play into it. One, first of all, is your water supply. That plays in very importantly for our outlying districts or outlying areas. And the other part is training, and particularly attendance at training. So that's something that's going to be on our radar to make some improvements on. And obviously that's been on our radar anyway, but now understanding that that fits into ISO and we could make some significant, hopefully some significant improvements in our ISO rating if we improve our training attendance. And I understand that that is associated with improving our training as well. Then basically that gives the board a bit more focus towards pursuing that, just so that you all understand where that's going. Is that all from you, Chief?
Other than filling in the gaps on the old business, correct.
Okay, I'll let you jump in as necessary there. So in the old business section, I have a statement to read regarding the hostile workplace complaint that was filed on May 28th. The board decided to employ external investigators. So just give you 1 second. In May 2020, the board received a complaint of hostile work environment at Nederland Fire. In order to impartially investigate that claim, the board decided to retain the services of Employment Compliance Solutions, here on known as ECS, to carry out an inquiry. After the initial inquiry, ECS found the claim did not match the legal criteria for hostile workplace. The legal criteria for such a claim are harassment or discrimination against a protected group. Protected groups are defined by age, gender orientation, religious beliefs, race, color, national origin, disability, and reprisal. However, based on the inquiry, they did warn the board that the environment at Nederland Fire could be judged as an unpleasant work environment and advised the board to carry out a climate review. I will explain that in a minute, to find out if that is a true, find out if that's true and remedy the situation. A climate review interviews all employees, both staff and volunteer, to gain a clear picture of the work environment. At this time, the board intends to continue the climate review as an internal process to ensure we understand the organization and how it may be affected. It is important to note that the work environment is influenced by many factors and events, and no one person or incident describes the whole picture. The board is committed to ensuring that Nederland Fire fosters an inclusive environment free of any harassment or discrimination. We believe that such an environment is vital for the continued success of the department. The board continues to investigate the other allegations that were made and will report back when we have concluded those. Anyone on the board can chime in on the climate review part if they feel it should be external or internal. My opinion is that we could manage this internally with some guidance from an external HR source that I know of, and we can source somebody else if somebody else has a better option or solution. And just to explain, the climate review basically is a series, the interviewers, so it would be a two-member board panel. So the board as a whole will design or pick a number of questions that they feel will properly investigate the environment within Nederland Fire. And everybody will be asked the same questions. The questions may be a free-form answer or maybe a scaled answer. So like a 1 to 10, and then if you answer like a 7 or something, we can ask you why you think it's a 7, what particular things made you come to that conclusion. Everybody gets asked all the same questions. All of the answers are completely confidential and are aggregated into a final report that gives us a picture as a board of the environment of Nedfire and how it's operating. This is the kind of thing that's done in large organizations fairly frequently. The organization I work for does this about every 3 years. And even though we're a completely remote working environment, we still have issues within our working environment that need to be resolved in order for the company to function properly. So it's not an abnormal thing to do. I personally think it's a very healthy thing for an organization to do because it can pick up on things really, really early in the process. That was all I had to say on that. Does anybody have any comments or questions?
Yeah, I think as a new board too, I think that such a review will help us get a better picture, you know, especially for the new board members, what the present climate is like. And I think this is a good exercise to push forward for sure.
Yeah. Ian, is that you feel as though this is something that a human resources consultant could help us craft or in some cases lead?
Yeah, so we have two options. We can use a human resources consultant to either help us craft the questions and help us understand them. I was doing some research today. There's some very specific criteria that you can cover and the questions and how you word the questions. And obviously none of us are HR experts. So we can go external for that. We could take the whole review external. I spoke to ECS on Tuesday. So their rate for doing a culture review is $275 an hour, which is the same rate they did for the investigation. They say it takes, I think, roughly about a day for them to organize the questions. And obviously they have some background already. And then they reckon it takes about an hour to interview each person, and then probably another about 8 hours to produce the report for that. And as part of that report, they would then provide us with HR guidance on what they found and a conclusion.
So I think, Ian, I think it's going to be important for somebody external to review the questions. I think we have to be very careful about not leading the members to certain answers with those questions. You know what I'm saying?
So I agree.
It's important to have somebody external review the question that has expertise in that and say, yeah, these questions are acceptable. They can be asked as written.
Yeah, I agree with that. That's why I was curious about a human resources type contractor consultant. And I know that that was something that we needed to get some traction on regardless. So,
yeah. Yeah, I completely agree with you, Henry. Obviously, you know from my issues of impartiality with the investigation, I was keen to push that external for that same very same reason. So, okay, I will look at getting some external advice on that. And also, obviously, we have to be careful in the questions we ask that we stay within the boundaries of employment law. So that's it's a very complicated area, as we all know. Any other questions?
You know what the cost is going to be?
Depends on how we do it. So if we used a consultant to help us work up the questions, my guess would probably be $1,000 to $2,000 on that. That would be about an 8-hour time window for that. And another $2,000 for the report. And then we'd be interviewing, I think, roughly maybe 14 people. So that's 14 more hours. I haven't done the math on it, I'm sorry. But I guess we'd be somewhere in the same range that we were in for the investigation, which, because that did not turn into a hostile workplace investigation, did not go on as long. So the $5,000 to $10,000 I judged on that is probably within this same window.
That's if they do the entire review.
That would be if they did the entire review. Yeah, if we have somebody just provide us with the research for the questions. And I would also suggest some guidance in once we've got the answers to the questions, how we collate that and how we deal with that information and what that truly means to us. But I can flesh out costs on that a little bit harder.
I haven't really done. Do you know what the investigation cost us so far?
I do not. I have not seen the invoicing for that yet. I have a vague idea, but I'm not sure, and I don't want to make any promises I can't keep on that. I would expect that billing to arrive fairly soon. So I guess I will do some a little bit more background research and try and get some better costs on this before the next board meeting. And then also by then we will also know the cost of the investigation. So we can make a better judgment if that's how you'd like to do that.
We currently have more than 14 members though.
I'm not sure. That was just off the top of my head. So there'd be all the staff plus however many members we currently have. Which, I think Chief would have a better handle on that than I do. And I can talk to him about that.
I think going internal is just a matter of who has the time to be able to execute the review or the interviews.
Yeah. And that's another challenge to factor in for everybody is how we schedule those interviews around the board schedule and the volunteers schedules. Cause what I don't want it to do is like to just drag out forever. So if anybody who's, any of our members who are listening, if you have some ideas about how you think that would look for you, whether we take a couple of Saturdays to do that, or whether we take some evenings to do that, whatever works for you, I'd be welcome to receive your input on that. Okay, if there's nothing else, I'll do some a bit more background on that. We only received the conclusion last week, and I spent most of the weekend working on that for the board, and haven't had a chance to do much more this week. So,
yeah, let me know if you need some help on that, Ian.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate that. You just volunteered yourself.
I know.
So moving on in the old business, the insurance and pension plan complaint, that basically is, I covered that in the statement. We're still investigating those. There's quite a lot of work to do on that. Some historical background that we need to investigate and look into to understand properly what's going on there. Human resources quotes and investigation. Chief, have you got any further on those?
I haven't done anything because I thought you were kind of doing that as part of the investigation.
Okay. I think we've probably had some crossover there for sure. Can I put you back on that task, please, to try and look at some long-term HR proposals that we can use internally?
Okay.
Thank you. Was that assigned to Rick? Is that right?
Yes.
And so this has been probably 2 months now. So can we get a date assigned to that where we can have some sort of presentation with a number of vendors where we can actually understand what would be offered, what it would cost, by when? When can we have this presentation so we have some sort of expectation that it'll be done soon?
Pat, are you asking me?
Yeah.
So
say like three vendors.
So I got us joined SDA and Ian was able to look at those resources. To be honest, I didn't look at what the employer resources are on SDA. So you may have a better idea of that if they have something to offer. I will refollow up with Mountain States Employment Council, and I will work on finding you a third vendor. Do you have anything for me about SDA? Do they have resources that are going to help with this?
I didn't see any that would necessarily help us in terms of a long-term HR management. They have resources that can help you do like your policy manual and make sure that that's completed and up to date. That seems to be their angle from that, is ensuring that you're compliant in terms of employment law.
But okay. You and I get together with the resources that you've got. Again, I'll follow up with Employment Council, see who else I can find. And do you want that presentation, if I can get it done by them, for the next meeting?
Yeah, I think, that would be good. It'd be a good start for sure.
Okay.
And we certainly don't have to make any concrete decisions next meeting, but it would be great to have a little more information, generally what it's going to cost, what services they're going to provide, and be able to do a more or less a side-by-side comparison of at least two, preferably three vendors, and we can go from there for sure. So yeah, next meeting would be great.
Okay.
Any other comments? Okay. Station cleanup progress, Chief.
Still working on two. One is pretty tight. And right now, focus, now that I've got engine one down to get repaired, is pretty much getting the apparatus in and out of the various services. I had one interest in the old yellow engine that has, I haven't got a phone call back from them. Indian Peaks is ready for 5623. Jim's supposed to be digging up the title. And then the old yellow truck from High Country. One of the mechanics slash welder wanted to inquire about bartering that. And I've got a phone call waiting to hear back from him on what we agree a value of that vehicle is.
Okay. You had mentioned to me that you may be interested in your old command vehicle. Is that still true?
That's true.
Okay.
I kind of wanted to wait until things settled down before we got into negotiation on that.
Sure. I just want the rest of the board to know that's a possibility, just so that we understand what we're doing about the vehicles at Station 2 or where we are with those. And also, did you get any return response regarding the Jeep up there, the plow truck?
I'm sorry. I got to retract down his number, and I'll forward that to you.
Okay. Yeah, if you do that, I'll chase him up. Thank you.
What's on the what happened to that old pump from, I think it came from Sugarloaf. It was on the trailer at Station
Donated 2. Donated to town in Nederland.
Oh, good. Good. And on the Keter inspections, anything significant that really should preclude these trucks from running?
No. The minor issues on most of them, not necessarily inexpensive issues, is example 5601 had just started leaking on the axle seal, and that's going to turn into a $4,000 repair, $2,500 in parts.
Yeah.
They wanted to fine-tune the adjustments, brake adjustment on 17, and replace the steering, I don't know, some component of that. Same with the drag arm on 41. The biggest issue we have, Pat, the discussion is 42, which is the tender at Station 2. Uh-huh. And that likely has 6,000 to 8,000 in outstanding maintenance on it. It's got a pump that's not very good, and that's $5,000. And I think the hard decision for the board will be whether we seek a replacement. We absolutely need a tender with that capacity or something close to it, ISO. But we bought the truck for $7,000, and I'm not sure that it is worth $10,000 to $15,000 in repairs.
Chief, I tend to agree with you, and I understand why we have to keep it. So what you're saying, I agree with. That would be tough to adjust.
So right. And so at some point in the near future, so again, that would be my truck with the greatest concern, and it virtually never gets driven anywhere. And so I'll at some point start looking at the used tender market, and I'll try and provide some recommendations around that.
Okay.
Based on what I see in this report, I'm pretty disturbed about the number of cross members that are either missing hardware or broken both sides. Did Keita give you any indication of the roadworthiness of that vehicle? Because I don't think I'd be happy to drive that.
They certainly didn't say absolutely don't drive it.
Mm-hmm.
I think the interesting, most telling piece, so yes, I'm concerned about those cross members. I don't know that that's something that they need to do, or we can reinstall the bolts on the ones that are missing. But functionally, nobody's taken that on a call anyhow. But I'm relatively concerned with it.
So if let me ask you a question. They did a DOT inspection on it. If that truck were to be pulled over on the side of Highway 93 coming out of Golden by the State Patrol for their inspection, would they allow that truck to continue down the road, or would they make a private company pull it over and tow it?
I don't know that.
Well, if we're not sure about the safety of that vehicle, I wouldn't be comfortable with leaving it in service right now.
Okay.
Well, we all know which pieces of apparatus cause or are involved in most of the fire department accidents and fatalities.
Understood.
Water tenders. Not just water tenders. Those are, you know, majority of them are on flat ground out in the plains. We've got potentially a water tender that has some cross member issues, and we're up in the mountains. So that's enough concern for me. I don't know about anybody else.
I'd agree with that. I'd recommend we place it out of service. I mean, it can stay where it is, but should be clearly marked that it shouldn't move. And I appreciate it hasn't moved for some time, but
right.
We should indicate that properly. I think that was the only one that concerned me. The others were pretty much regular maintenance that needs to be done. Chief, if you can just keep us up to date on where we are with those. I appreciate there's a lot of vehicle juggling that has to be done to make that happen.
I'll do that, and I'll put out the email that it's out of 42 is out of service.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Any more comments on the, actually, as we drifted into that, on the inspection notes that I sent out to the board? Okay. I just have just one further comment. It's fairly obvious that from these notes that we had some deferred maintenance on vehicles, and we need to keep on top of that. You know, we're asking people to volunteer their service, or we're paying people to drive these vehicles. It's our responsibility to ensure that they are safe to drive. And the way we do that is by ensuring they get inspected and maintained appropriately. I think we're going a long way towards doing that. Obviously, like I said, there's a lot of vehicle juggling that has to happen for all this to happen. Just for the benefit of the board, Chief, would you just like to talk about 5624, the conclusion or the ideas that Keita came up with about what was going on there, and then what you've done since the inspection to investigate that further?
Sure. So we're talking about the shimmy that occurs at the shift point between 34 and 36 miles an hour. And so we discussed a number of options, and Keeter suggested either putting a GoPro under, putting it on a dyno in Denver, or maybe some acoustic sensors. And so my suggestion was that we consider pulling that rear axle out and seeing if that modified what occurred. But prior to doing that, Charlie and I took that out, and we drove it up to Rainbow Lakes and back, and we were unable to duplicate it on that stretch of road. We then came back, we pulled the rear axle, drove the truck down to Rogers Park, drove it back, and no shimmy occurred utilizing just the front axle. And there's absolutely a shift point right there at around 35. We put the axle back in, but since then we took off a lot of our hydraulic extrication equipment and replaced that with some of the electronics extrication equipment. And so the weight of that truck and its distribution has changed a little bit. I haven't had time to replicate the shimmy in Boulder Canyon. I'll try and get that done this week. But I have had follow-up conversations with Keeter, and the current plan is to schedule some time on the dyno down in Denver with the Keeter mechanic present. Charlie and I looked pretty hard at the angles of the rear drive line, and originally it was suggested that we put in a cardine, I don't know, some kind of special joint in the rear drive shaft. But to be honest, that angle is not great. It's almost flat, like 1 degree. And so I'm not convinced that that is going to be either A, the cause or the solution. But the next step is to see if we can duplicate it in Boulder Canyon. And then the step following that will be the dyno in Denver.
Got it. Thank you for that. Okay. Any further comments on vehicles as we stand?
Not for me.
Okay. I don't have any further. Or am I doing a second? Let me think about that. I have the COVID-19 reimbursement status in here. I assume we're still in the air on that one. Just waiting for some kind of response. Chief, sorry.
Ryan's been handling that reimbursement model, and so he's got more of a feel on that. I haven't heard anything different. I did get your email about the changes, the potential mail ballot pieces, and I'll follow up with him on that.
Yeah, and sorry that came so late. So just for the rest of the board, I was on the Special Districts Association's 2020 legal roundup. And one of the things that they pointed out was that there's a grant fund available in Colorado for businesses affected by COVID, or special districts as well, affected by COVID. And in that, they said that potentially if you had to alter your election in order to for COVID-19, you could claim back any expenses outside of what you would have normally spent. So there's potential there that we could cover some of the costs of the absentee ballots that occurred. So I asked Chief to have a look at that. Unfortunately, the closing date for that is July 7th. So we're kind of a bit tight on the deadline. I had heard about it previously, but I didn't realize it could be useful for the election. I thought it was just for actual costs that you'd incurred, you know, like PPE, as a for instance, or lost business and lost rent. So we'll see if we can squeeze in there. Basically, this time, all you need to do is apply and say, hey, we spent some money. And then you have time to back that up. But the closing date for getting into the grant is the 7th. Next item is a volunteer firefighter maintenance cost. Ryan got those to me. I haven't had a chance to look and digest them. And that was just so that we get an idea of how much we need to spend each year to maintain a volunteer. And that's tied to the recruitment and retention grant. So we understand what the costs would be for that should we get that grant and use that to leverage more volunteers. And stop me at any point if you have any questions. Vehicle maintenance contract. Chief, are you still looking for an EVT that we have a contract with, or are we intending to use KETA moving forward to do inspections and then maintenance as required?
So I've got contacted by two different parties from the Colorado Fire Mechanics Association. And I think that the take on this is that we're going to address the issues that Keeter's identified first, and then we can do a fleet readiness review with one of the EVTs.
Okay. That sounds good. That sounds good progress to me. Any other
on that topic, not necessarily with maintenance issues, but any plans for getting back on a pump testing, ladder testing, and hose testing schedule so we can document that and start working towards ISO stuff?
So, Pat, it's kind of a mixed bag. And so, historically, we've done quite a bit of pump and ladder testing, and the ISO requirement is 3 contiguous years.
Yeah.
Typically, ISO has been looking at us every 10 years. And so the question is, do you want annual ladder testing every year, or do we want to look to take a break on some of that based on our low usage and Only do that, you know, every, you know, take a 5-year break in between.
What's it cost to test the ladders? I know they do it by ladder. Generally off the top of your head.
You know, I'm going to throw a number like 500 out there, but I don't think it's that small. I can tell you that I certainly, when we had 5616, had a little bit more reservation with that truck. And so we did that pretty regularly. 17, I've got less of a concern with that. And, you know, for me, we're throwing ground ladders once a training and maybe once on a fire. So I'm not expecting significant issues. And we've actually had a little bit of trouble with the company where they've replaced some parts that weren't the correct parts. But again, I guess from a fiduciary responsibility perspective, do we want to do ladders every year? I understand the safety aspect, but there might be where we choose to do that every other or whatever. There's a number of options there.
We would get full credit if we at least 3 consecutive years of demonstrated testing for ISO. Is that right?
That's my understanding.
And to test all the ladders the department owns, well, I shouldn't say that, the departments that are assigned to apparatus that are in service ladders, you suspect somewhere between, on the high side, 1,000, on the low side, 500? Is that?
That's my guess.
Would you say that's an
accurate? My guess.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know. For $1,000, I know that I'll speak for where I work. I know we do dumber things with $1,000, and to ensure that when somebody does climb that ladder, it at least is safe to climb.
Okay.
And that's my 2 cents on that. So it's like just like the pump testing and hose testing. You know, we want to eliminate any potential for failure before we actually go to the call.
Understood.
So,
I think that I don't. Go ahead, Ian.
No, go on. Finish what you're saying. You may be saying the same thing.
That I think we had 2 years and maybe we had 3 years of consecutive pump tests when ISO came in 19. And. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I agree with you on the pump test. I don't have any heartburn about doing annual pump testing. I agree with that. Hose testing is somewhat of a similar discussion, Ian, that you did a great deal of that. And I do think we have to identify hose a problem. I can tell you it's an enormous amount of work annually for the number of staff and volunteers that we have. So if you were to ask me, should we spend our time on training or hose testing, I would tell you training.
So let me throw something else out there. As we go into this next budget cycle, what if we do business cases that reflect ladder testing? So give you a chance to figure out how many ladders we want to test, run it past whomever you'd like to have come out and have test the ladders, get a budget written for that. And then also, works or something like that that comes out and they actually test the hose and roll it for you and they give you a bid by foot. Have you probably looked into that? I'm sure.
I don't know who would do that hose testing, so if you've got a contact, I can certainly
there's a few people out there. We use one company and they seem to be good and efficient, and they can get like 3 or 4 engines done in a day for us. So if you like, I'll certainly forward their name and number and contact.
Okay. I'll get those numbers for you.
And that, so if we're going to, you know, start working on a line item budget, this would be a perfect opportunity to plug, you know, from pump testing, ladder testing, hose testing into that budget. And then, you know, we can make decisions from there after that about the financial side of things.
Okay.
And just to clarify something for me, Chief, so we have to do is, do you say three consecutive years of ladder hose and pump testing? Is that everything, or can that be staggered?
No, that's everything.
All of it.
Okay.
And, you know, it's kind of like I alluded to, it's just like PM for all these trucks. We want to figure out the weak points, the failure points, before we actually have the call. And that is one of the benefits of doing all these testing, tests for the hose, the ladder, stuff like that. So annually, not just the 3 years before ISO comes out to evaluate, but if we can afford to have someone else do that and not burden our staff with it, and we can afford to do it every year, just like an annual DOT inspection on these trucks, I think it's well worth it.
Absolutely.
Okay, so Chief, we can work on that and work that into the new budget. Pat, do you have any urgent requirements for that to happen this year, or are you more interested in getting that into the budget cycle so that it's in our spending plan for next year and continuing?
No, I think that we need to just start building a budget that reflects a few changes, maybe just kind of refining what's already being done. And so I would be comfortable as long as we put that into the budget as line item business cases for next year.
Okay. Well, let's work on that, Chief.
Okay.
We'll see what it costs, make a business case, and we'll figure out how we either pay for it or justify it another way. Anything else in that area we want to cover? I went a bit off topic, but that's fine.
Sorry.
Okay, vacation and sick policy update. I haven't had a chance to do anything on that. Part of this special districts association, they mentioned there was a new Colorado employment bill that mandates sick time for employees. It covers part-time employees as well as full-time employees. So I'm going to dig up the wording on that and understand how that affects us. I don't believe it affects us for our full-time employees, but it may affect us for our part-time employees. So I will report back on that next month for you. The personnel policy manual dispute procedures I talked about last month. Again, I haven't had any time to deal with that, so I'm going to push that to next month as well. CPOR, I was on the town board of trustees meeting last week, and CPOR came and did a virtual presentation that explained what they do and what they're going to do for the town. So basically their big thing, and Chief, you can chime in on this as well and correct anything that I misunderstood, basically what they'll do, they'll come to a town and they'll take a sort of macro perspective of the town, its construction, how it intends to construct in the future, its surrounding area. So in our case, obviously, we're pretty much the wildland interface. There's not much urban going on. They take all that into account. They look at, interestingly, they look at neighborhoods that were built some time ago, like for instance, Big Springs, and make suggestions about additional egresses that were never in the original building plan because they were never required at that time. They'll make suggestions about how to move forward with the building code in your town, city, or district. And then produce a report that basically gives the town a plan for the future of how it should work with its planning rules and regulations and its building codes in order to provide it with the best opportunities for protection against wildland fire and protect the town. Overall, it was a pretty interesting presentation they did. They do have, some of their work is funded by the Forest Service. But they actually say, they don't actually tell anybody what to do. So they don't say you need to chop down these trees. They just say, overall, this is the kind of plan you should be aiming for long-term in order to protect your town from wildland fire. So it was a pretty interesting presentation, pretty interesting idea. The town was very interested in learning from them. And basically, we have a grant that covers us that has to be fulfilled by the end of this year. So they're doing the work for us now. The two people who are doing the work from CPOR actually have been to Nederland. They understand the area. They lived here for a while. So that's quite good. So they have some really good input on, they understand what's already been done, what the Forest Service plans to do and how that may pan out. And they said they should get a report back to the town by end of October, I believe. So we'll wait and see what comes from that. My takeaway from it is that I think their suggestions could work, could dovetail nicely into the mitigation grant that we've applied for, if that came through. I think there'd be some opportunity there to leverage that report to make some improvements in mitigation around our district. That was about it. Any questions, comments?
It kind of sounds like a duplication of that fire. What is that thing, Rick, that you have going?
The Wildland
Partners. The Community Wildfire Protection Plan?
That's it.
Yes. With the chiefs?
Okay, for chief.
So the difference is that they look at some of the statutes that the town has adopted that functionally duplicate urban interface fire code and things like that. They look at the planning cycle and things like that. So the CWPP is go cut these trees in these neighborhood and improve egress here. And this is more at a statute and policy level. So how the town is allowing development as an example.
Yeah, okay. These are more, it's a more holistic approach. It's like the more the general area rather than particular items. That's my understanding.
So this affects policy more than recommendations.
It is recommendations on what the town will adopt as policy or how we might choose to implement a forest health code or something in statute or other code that lessens wildfire risk.
Okay.
Any other questions? Okay. Big Springs Egress, you covered, Chief. Thank you. So on the new business, we've already sort of discussed this, but I'd like to suggest that we start looking at our 2021 budget now. So a few factors that may affect that. Obviously, COVID may affect property tax. We don't know yet. So far, it hasn't, but we need to kind of start thinking about that. And then also looking at that budget in terms of the items that have been highlighted here, so vehicle maintenance and moving forward on that, and then pump, ladder, and hose testing, and moving forward on that. So, Chief, I'd like you to start at least working on the bones of that budget. It can be in the same format that we're currently using. We may look to modify that format as we build it out, and it becomes more of a line item thing. I'd like the budget to reflect a little bit better where the money's actually going. I know that's kind of a kind of guessing game. I do budgets too. But I think we can do a better job of estimating where we're going to spend next year and moving forward.
We have copies of previous year's budgets, correct? I'd like to.
I can show you where to find this, Todd, because they're all filed with the state.
Thank you.
So adding work to anybody's plate of making copies.
Ian, one of the problems we're going to run into on working on budgets this early is probably going to be our projected income. I would assume that whatever we budget now is going to lead the income projection from the county. We're going to have to redo that budget once we see that, because most likely with the economy as it is right now, those income projections are going to be potentially less. Yeah. And so we'll have to deal with that and probably recreate that budget again at the time when those income projections going to be published by the county.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
When does that happen, Henry?
October, Henry, is it?
Say that again.
When does that happen?
I'm sorry, I could not hear you.
When do the
preliminary numbers?
Yeah,
I think Chief's got the answer. Go, Chief.
Preliminary projects come in August. Final numbers come last week of November. We've seen a $40,000 difference between the two of those. Henry, I think we can project based on 2020 income. Most pertinent is we have $47,000 in contingency to reserve this year. We spent a good bit on that on the election, and we're spending a very good part of that on vehicle maintenance. But I think that we can project, hose testing, ladder testing, and some of those minor things, and I think we will fairly rapidly gobble up any of that discretionary income that we have, but I don't think it's that hard. My concern, Ian, for changing the way we do things is, so Todd, if you ask me how much did we spend on Station 1 for the past 10 years, I can give that to you. And how much did we spend on maintenance for 5631, I can give that to you. But as soon as we start changing categories, it may be more difficult to look at our historic data and compare our like years. Mm-hmm. So I guess if you ask how much did we spend on Station 1 for the current budgetary process and what's getting put where, so I guess what I would like is to make sure that you guys are fully on board understanding the current budgetary sake of matching historical stuff. But where, before we overhaul it.
So for this 2021, Rick, what do you have on your mind as far as capital expenses, improvements, any thoughts there you've been giving thought to and where you want to go in 2021, specific projects?
So the significant change, Pat, from 18 to 19 is we took that 160 or so thousand income that we had spent on the station payment, and that got rolled into operational expenses. And that gave us, the 72,000 to put towards capital and grant. So I don't have any specific direction other than, to be honest, we've identified that Tender 2 is not roadworthy, and so we need to come up with a solution for that.
Specific direction.
But I think that, typically property taxes are a two-year cycle, and so that $47,000 in contingency to reserve, I think that line item stuff that we wish to add, we have 3,000 in regulator flow testing this year. Mm-hmm. And so I think by the time we add hose, ladder, some of the middle expenses, we're going to gobble up 25,000 of that 57.
Are there particular grants that you are
in this year?
Okay.
I'm sorry, you broke out. Particular grants.
Are there particular grants that the department or the district applies for every year that we could reliably set money aside for whatever EMS grant, if there's a matching amount there? And can we start looking at saying, hey, this is the grant we're going to go for, and this is what we want, and it's a 50% matching, so we want to budget that amount?
So that was the intention of that $72,000 in grant match. But as far as, do I know what I'm going to ask for in the EMS grant for 2021? I don't today. And as we identify various needs and various grants come available, you know, we set the money aside, that cap at 72, but it's somewhat of we develop that as the grants become available, and to a degree because they change the priority of the items that they're funding. So specific to EMS grant, we typically try not and have our hand out every year. We try and give them a break every other or something like that. 19 and 20 are unusual in that we got awards two consecutive years. But I think they develop a little bit of, I don't know if apathy is the correct word, but I think if they see us show up at every grant cycle, they become fatigued. And so we try and only apply for the things that we can truly demonstrate need for.
Sure. So I'd suspect that you know, the easy low-hanging fruit would be the life packs.
Correct.
And as an example, knowing that, hey, whether we get this grant or not, we need new life packs. And so Starting to forecast into the future and recognizing whether it's EMS equipment or fire equipment, actually producing that in the line item budget so we can either say, well, we don't have the money, so let's roll this over to 2022. Let's see if we can get a grant in the meantime. But I guess what I'm looking for is some sort of way to forecast what our expenses will be in the future and figure out if we can't get the grant and we need those labs, we can start budgeting and doing a budget amendments at the end of the year, and then come 2 or 3 years down the road, we can pay cash for those life packs if we weren't to get a grant or a matching grant. So,
and that's functionally in 19, that's what we did, and we rolled that $24,000 into capital improvements, the reserve, and so that intention at the end of the cycle, the 72 that's committed, that if there's unspent funds remaining from that and that operationally we weren't over budget, that we would roll that into that capital reserve fund. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Like I said, it would be great to be able to sit down and discuss the district's needs and be able to prioritize those when we go into a budget cycle, and like any budget cycle, there are things that we'll have to put off till the following year or you know, 2 or 3 years from now, and focus on the priorities up front. But until we get everything laid out in front of us with what it's going to cost, you know, everything becomes a surprise as we go into next budget cycle. If that makes sense, I guess I'm looking for you know, the capital projects and expenses that you would foresee in 2021.
Sure. I understand that. You know, so some of the challenge on that. So we kind of identified that, you know, one of our lags is radio technology in our apparatus. And so we're on some pretty older, you know, older VHF radios, and there's some discussion of adopting in-cab 800s. And we have a grant request with Gilpin County for that equipment. And if that is not successful, then absolutely that would be something that we should be putting money aside to fund. But I can tell you it's fairly fluid because I don't know when they're going to announce those awards, things like that.
Right. A line item budget with specific business cases and justifications is what I'm used to. It's what I would be looking for. And it is going to take time. And I realize that property tax can certainly change. But we can certainly come November when you have that final, we're looking for what, first meeting in December is final budget approval? Is that
That's
what
you're
trying to ask? And yep. So it would be, you know, I think reasonable to say by, you know, first budget presentation in October, we can have a chance to go through it, take a look at things, figure out if we are if we are balanced, and if there's any changes, another 2 months after that before final approval, and that's kind of squeezing it. I know that I have to have my capital projects in April. So
understood.
I think that's something pretty close to what you'd like to have in your budget by October.
I'll try and work, since there's some discomfort with that entire timeline, I'll try and work on a preliminary for you, and I will look at potential capital expenditures and try and get that out to you. And maybe we can do that by September, and that'll give us a little more working room.
Sure. Yeah. Like I said, I personally, and it's certainly everybody else, please weigh in, but I don't mind if it's October. I want to make sure you have enough time to really give this some thought and think through what you feel will be your capital, and also, you know, breaking down from admin to operations, and also including training needs and budgeting for whether it's use of the tower or bringing the trailers up and things like that. So.
Okay.
And to my point, why I'm asking for this now, so just so you know, I'm actually doing my 2022 budget currently. That's okay. How far ahead I am forced to look by my organization. So my budget effectively is everything I know we need, everything I'd like to have, and then if there's money left over, I'd also like to do this. Okay. And I give them my budget, and I get back what they say I can have. So I always get what I need. I sometimes get what I want, and I very rarely get the dream items on my list. But at least they're in there, and it means I can have conversations about them. And everybody understands that, you know, I have a path forward for technology, so it's obviously where I work, about what I think we're going to need in 2 years' time. So they then can start budgeting in that they need to set aside $100,000 because I need some new whiz bang firewall thing. And the budget is not something that we're looking to like hold you to. Like Patrick says, it gives us a better idea of how to plan ahead in the future. And certainly not everything on the budget stays on the budget. There can be a lot of stuff that gets struck off. And that's to your point, Henry, about, I appreciate that we'll have to modify the budget when we understand how much money we're going to get. But that's much easier to do when you've got a budget that says, this is how much money we want to spend.
Sure. No problem.
And I think that will give us a lot more flexibility in the future to understand how we're going to spend money.
That's fair.
Okay. Any other comments, discussion on that? So just to verify, Chief, you think you can have a proposal by September that we can start talking about, bouncing around, adding to, subtracting from?
Sure. I honestly, Ian, you know, I think we're going to add the things that were not in the 20 budget, meaning hose testing, ladder testing, yep. SCBA testing, face mask testing. There won't be an election next year, so I don't have to worry about that. And I will look at our capital plan to a degree, but I still think that 72,000 commitment towards match and capital, but I will try and give you a little more detail on that, is functionally what I think it's going to look like, and it's going to be very similar to our 20 budget.
Yeah. And my suggestion would be to start with the 20 budget. And in terms of that 72 matching, the thing that I found missing in the current budget and the 2020 budget was just an explanation of where we anticipated that going. And obviously, I think that's just because the old board did and we don't. Some clarity in that would have been helpful. And it may have changed some decisions we made. I don't know. Cool. Okay. Anything else? I'm sure we will come back to that. I'm sure there will be more budget discussion. Vehicle disposal policy. I'm going to discuss that with you, Chief. I don't think we ever came to a resolution on that this month. So let's talk about that. I don't believe the district has a proper disposal policy. And it's just something that we need to tighten up overall. So I'm going to push that to future business if nobody has an objection.
That sounds good.
Okay. Pulaski, which we kind of discussed a little bit last month. Alex, who was working on that, needed to step away from it for a while for personal reasons, and also step away from the department for personal reasons. I had a fairly long conversation with him today about Pulaski and the reasons why he felt he needed to step away. And mostly they were purely personal reasons. But he did say that he's happy to bring that back, but it does need a lot more support from the leadership in the department. And more structured support in order to work. Because obviously it's a tool that has a certain amount of requirements attached to it. I'm trying to pick my words very carefully here. Obviously we're trying to encourage our volunteers to commit their time more than they currently do. So rather than just depending on volunteers turning up, you actually have some kind of commitment that says that they will be there. Chief, I'd like to have a longer conversation with you about how we move that forward, because I think it's still on the table. And I am aware of the active 911 scheduling tool. And I will tell you that Alex and I did have a fairly long chuckle about, oh yeah, that's on the feature list. Yeah, we're writing that now, about how long things can be on feature lists for. We were comparing lengths of schedules. He won with 5 years for getting a feature from when it was promised to getting it out. So just so you know, developers sometimes have different ideas on timescales. But that is still on the agenda. It is something that we really do need to work on. I know our shift officers are suffering. Chief and I have had this conversation about, you know, running night calls single-handed. And that's also tying in, unfortunately, with the realistic amount of volunteers that we have available on any given day. I've been watching Active 911 for about the last week or so. I'm not watching who turns up, but more just kind of how many people we're getting turning up on calls. And I think we're fairly exposed. So I think we need to do a number of things to improve that, both in the gaining volunteers, however we do that, and certainly maintaining them and making sure that we're looking after them and managing their training needs and keeping them engaged with the department. And Pulaski is hopefully a way to do that, but it's a two-way street. It requires work from the fire department itself, or the staffing of the fire department, and it also requires work from the volunteers. So I think that's a scope for a bigger discussion later. I'm going to talk to Alex again next week. And I think we'll come up with an implementation plan. And I'll talk to you as well, Chief, about how we feel that Pulaski was not a success on this round. And I think partly some of that had to do with the election, just the timing of that. There was a lot going on. Anybody else got any input for me on that?
Like last meeting, I was interested in setting some sort of staffing goal. And I know that Pulaski was dealing more with nighttime signup. Is that right? That was the primary concern?
That was the primary concern. That was its main goal. But I think Alex may be on the call and he can jump in. I think it could probably, and I don't want to put feature creep in here, sure. But I think it could be a general staffing application as well to expand mm-hmm. that out. And the ideal thing about it is that it's written for that purpose. And it's written very much for our department rather right. than things like when to work that we tried to use that really didn't work for us. And I think the complaint about that was, why can't we just say, I've got 4 hours when I'm available here, but outside of that, I can't do anything. So there's a whole probably bigger conversation to be had, but certainly at the moment, the goal is to at least staff nights with one person, ideally four. There are challenges with that.
So two things I would like to see from last meeting. I set a goal of 80% of the time, at least one person signed up at night. Rick said that he would certainly provide that information. I don't know that without Pulaski, if that's being tracked or not. So do we have any kind of staffing goals, any kind of something that the career staff, that really is their responsibility, is to ensure that staffing is met? Any thoughts on who's going to be responsible for administering or running Pulaski? And what are our goals? Where are we going to go with this? Where do we want to be in this time next year? So I guess what I'm saying is the career staff shouldn't task this to the volunteers. And I appreciate the fact that the volunteers were interested enough in, number one, creating this software, and number two, trying to the best of their ability from their position in the department, try to maintain the staffing that of 100%. But I don't know that that is the volunteer firefighter's role is to, in fact, I know it's not their role to run this program. Whatever, if we choose to use Pulaski or something else, it's not their responsibility to take care of staffing. That's the career staff. And so I'd like to have some sort of ability to track that and have a monthly report on what does our staffing look like. How many times is it just one captain responding out by themselves? Are we meeting our goals? Are we meeting our commitments to the community?
Okay. I think the first stage of that is setting a goal.
Yeah.
I think I'd like that to come from the career staff, our shift officers, as they're the ones who are basically doing all those calls and who are ending up shorthanded. So if we start with that goal of where we'd like to be, and then look at our staffing abilities, how many volunteers we have, and what response we're getting, I think that will expose to us the information we need to say what we need to do to move forward. Do we need more volunteers? Do we need more engagement? How do we do that? And then how do we do that question is something that we need to engage the volunteers with and have discussions with them about how they feel about that. So Patrick,
I think Ray brought it up earlier. How many active volunteers? So volunteers that are Fire One and EMR at the very least, whatever their qualifications are, how many volunteers do we have that are showing up and meeting their training and call commitment obligations currently?
Pat, are you asking me that?
Yeah, Rick, you probably be closest to the know in that.
So what I can tell you is that I think we have two people covering either last night or tonight, that we've got an applicant that's committed to coming up on one of the C-shift nights every tour. Realistically, we probably have five or six regular volunteers that are meeting 10% call minimums. And the COVID thing has kind of thrown training tracking pretty hard. Ironically, the Zoom meetings we're having much greater participation in, and the in-person stuff we're having some participation in, but it's variable. Right. I ran last Saturday's training, and I think we had some people there. So it is still, you know, the standard one-third of the volunteer roster that is largely active. The other third show up sometimes, and the bottom third only in times of crisis.
In that training, Rick, all seven of those people were volunteers?
Shift captain and myself. So probably five volunteers.
Okay.
Okay.
What do we have?
Go.
Do we have a specific budget for volunteers? How many we can afford to keep on the roster? What is our target number? If we were living in a perfect world, how many volunteers could we afford to have?
Well, unfortunately, I didn't see the numbers from Ryan to Ian on what volunteers cost. But we don't allocate funds, at least at this point in time, specific to volunteers. I would tell you that we likely have 22 to 24 volunteers, some applicants that are just getting started, and 30 would be a pretty nice number. But again, it all depends on each volunteer's ability to contribute.
Can you repeat those numbers again, Rick? Those, how many volunteers?
I think 22 to 24 currently, depends on the various applicant statuses. And I think 30 volunteers would help flush us out quite, you know, total. Assuming that some of those folks are going to be fairly active, would certainly broaden, you know, the hands to share the load.
Okay,
thanks. So the reality is that we have really four or five active, reliable volunteers right now. Is that a fair statement?
I think the number is greater than that.
What makes you...
Do
you think that the number is greater than that?
Well, thinking of the people that are doing shift work, and the people that are actively showing up, I think that is more like five or six. And again, so periodically I need to take a break for family, and they may be gone for a week or 2 weeks, but are fairly regular. So I don't think the four or five number accurately reflects the number of people showing up.
But you would say six regular?
Six or seven. Six, okay. Yeah, sure.
That ISO counts that as two full-time firefighters, is that right? Yeah, I think that's what they say. Three volunteers will basically 3-to-1 average there. So, yeah, that's troubling. We have to do something about that and come up with some sort of plan immediately. Essentially running the district with three firefighters. That's the way ISO would look at it. I'm pretty darn sure they look at it that way.
What, when you were saying a staffing report, Patrick, like, you know, during the these meetings, Chief gives a report on, you know, this time it was verbal, just the calls that occurred, and just a, it was just a, you know, real brief rundown, boom, 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 boom. But what if we had a report that said, you know, this date for this particular month had this call, you know, this person and this person showed up. Another call, this person showed up, and so on and so forth. Just kind of give us the lay of the land for now, and who are the people that are showing up. Is that what you're looking for, Patrick?
Well, I'm also looking, that's nice, it's helpful, but I'm looking for how many days of the week, how many nights, however you want to break it out. Do we have, we obviously have our one paid captain, and do we have up until 7 o'clock in the evening? We have two volunteers committed, and we know that whether they're coming from home or the fire station, they're heading to the call in some capacity. And then at night, we've got one volunteer that signed up, and that captain can now reliably start making tactical decisions and building a game plan on what he knows he has as far as personnel or members signed up and ready to go.
Right. So, but the discussion we were just having was trying to understand what the pool is that the captains can pull from today.
Right. That pool is incredibly small, and that's part of not getting people to sign up, is that we're taxing, you know, six people.
Right. I mean, it's, if Chief, if you're saying we got 22 to 24 current volunteers, that sounds real good, but then if we really only have a pool of, say, five volunteers to pull from, realistically, then as Patrick is saying, that's a dire situation. We're putting the shift captains in a tough spot. It seems like we would really want to have a clear understanding of what actually that pool really is. And do we really, I mean, do we have the 22 to 24 current volunteers to pull from?
Todd? So it's always been my experience that your top third are fairly active, your middle third sometimes active, and your bottom third, again, during big events. And as best I understand the problem, you have to increase the total numbers to increase your thirds. And in discussing this with the other chiefs within the county, that distribution looks very similar. I can certainly give you, there used to be an average number of responders per call, but I can tell you that it's a very complex dynamic. And as example, we have one volunteer that spends a tremendous amount of time at our stations running calls on all three different shifts, maybe 40 hours a week that he's at the station, and incredibly valuable. But what I can tell you is that between him and the shift captain and perhaps one another volunteer, that might be the only staffing that they need to handle 80% of our calls. And so the way that plays out is that we have our volunteer waiting at the station, waiting for calls. We get home, the ambulance rolls out, and the rest of the volunteers sitting at home say, they've already gone to the call, so I'm not coming. And so in some ways, it makes it really hard that, so if we have people standing by waiting, then some of our responders from home are then not coming, either expecting that these folks are going to be there and we're just going to waste their time. So it's a little harder than just pinning folks down. There's a lot of dynamics to it.
Do you see
Boulder County?
Go ahead, Patrick. No, you go ahead.
So go ahead, Patrick. Working off of what you were alluding to, yes, I agree with you. A vast majority of the calls we go on can be handled with 2 to 3 people. You know, always more the merrier, 4 to 5 people, even better. We have fewer injuries, lifting injuries, back injuries, things like that. We can go into that whole detail. But I agree with you is that typically 3 people can certainly generally get the job done. The issue is when you have the volunteers at home, almost pager fatigue, where they hear the pager go off, they listen, they know, hey, there's somebody at the state and it's a med check at the PD. And so yeah, you're right. They're not going to get out of bed at 3 o'clock in the morning when they know they have 2 responders going to that. So is anybody through Active 911 or more importantly, Boulder County, is there a tiered system? So Alpha, Bravo, Charlie, Delta calls, Alpha being lift assist and it can be handled with 2 people and the volunteers don't even get that page. Then when they arrive on the scene.
So, okay. So,
all right, fair enough. So I guess what I'm looking for is at the very least, if we have the one captain at night and we can at least get one more volunteer to agree to sign up. And of the, you know, like you said, the upper third that are always going to sign up and probably putting too much time into it, meaning they're exhausting themselves. And then the next third is somewhere in between. Of all these volunteers that we claim we have, can we not ask them to sign up for responding on a call? And ask them to put their name on a calendar and say, hey, I'll be responding tonight.
So Pat, I think that was all done. And that was, at least to me, presented as the grassroots ground up with the shift officer's input with Pulaski. Mm-hmm. And so I think all the volunteers have heard that request. And so there's 2 pieces here. And so I've certainly looked at other departments that require shifts as opposed to respond home. And they're having similar issues where they're looking at lessening their requirements because folks aren't meeting the standards that they set. I have no issue, and Ian has the draft email for me supporting Pulaski. But unfortunately, Pulaski got pulled down. The Active 911 scheduling app, I don't know if or when it's coming out, but I'm told that it will. So I certainly don't mind, again, asking the volunteers to commit to shifts. And I honestly agree with you on the pager fatigue, that if I knew Monday night is my night and I cover every Monday night, that sure would seem easier to me. But it doesn't seem like that has wholeheartedly been adopted by a majority of the volunteers. I will say to their credit, though, that there are a number of people signing up for shifts and people that are staffing at the station. And so there are some folks that are doing that. Mm-hmm. The difficulty is finding out why that middle third or even the bottom third is unable, reluctant, or because of life challenges, they can't commit to that schedule. So I don't mind asking again. And I wrote a nice support letter for Pulaski, and unfortunately it got pulled down at the time.
Yeah. So back on that middle third, that bottom third, if you're rarely seeing them, And when they do show up, if they haven't been to training and they're not familiar with the operations, are they more of a liability on scene?
That's not my experience, or I don't think we would keep them on at all.
So
even
to train, they don't need to respond and just show up when things are going terribly wrong and everything's okay?
I didn't say that 100% either, but I guess what I would say is for people that, I don't know, travel, whatever, and they're not around for a handful of months and then they come back and they're active, et cetera, that, I don't know, travel, whatever, I'm pretty grateful for whatever help they're willing to offer. And I would say that these are typically are new people who haven't learned the job.
So I've got a question, because it's obviously a fairly complex and dynamic situation to both understand and resolve. So the run sheets that are filled out each call, do they just go into Firehouse as like number of responders, or is there any kind of metric in Firehouse that lets you track the individual responder?
No, I can tell you by individual every call you've been on since you've been at Ned Fire. Mm-hmm. And I can give you call percentages per year. That weird one was the number of responders, average responders per call, because it doesn't take into account the call complexity.
Yeah.
But if you kind of, like, yeah. I can give you call participation percentages for whatever time period you request.
I think I'm probably looking for something a bit more complex in terms of like the statistical distribution of responders and you know, kind of who you would expect to turn up, who's turning up more. And obviously the invisible thing, like you said there, is the responders who are at the station during the day, because they're effectively invisible if there's no call.
That's correct.
I'd be interested if we could figure out a way to track that a little bit more to understand how that works.
So Ian, currently, I shouldn't say that. So for people like George Newell, he comes in and he fills out, I was there from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. And I know that George had 12 hours of standby time on whatever given date. And we do track that. For people like Fred, who comes in 3 to 5 to 8 hours every day, we may track that, but it's pretty imprecise.
Thank you. Okay. And I'm really just trying to get a feel for where we stand with active responders and understand, you know, the problem as it stands. And I know that this is a consistent problem in volunteer departments, is you can have 30 responders, but only 5 of them really respond. I'm just trying to figure out a way that we can visualize that. So that we can explain that to ourselves a little bit more. And maybe that's I think it's probably a discussion that you and I can have about Firehouse, because I know it's not the most friendly software, but I'm also happy to look into that from a more statistical point of view.
Okay.
And I think that may answer some of the questions that Patrick's asking here and Todd's asking here, that we're just trying to get that. Trying to get a hold on a feel of where the department is as a whole. Okay. We're keeping you up, Chief.
But I can tell you historically, this is not new. And this goes back beyond my 30, however long I've been around.
Sure.
When it was up to me, I kind of knew who I had, what I could pull. You knew who you could count on. They were going to be there all the time. The ones that would show up occasionally, you had to learn what they were capable of doing and make sure that you used them appropriately. But there was times where you were just absolutely thrilled to death to see.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
It does. I've been there too. I know how that goes. So I too have been part of that. Been the only person on that call. And it's seeing somebody else turn up is a good thing.
Ray, did you have any reporting back to you in regards to who did show up for certain calls, or is this just your observations that you kept on top of personally?
No, there's definitely people that just sit back and look at the pager and decide whether they're coming or not, whether it was worth their time.
But you were watching who was showing up, and it wasn't necessarily like the shift captains providing you reports on.
We didn't have shift captains then. It was total volunteers, everybody.
Gotcha. Okay. So, thanks, Greg.
And you had your core group of 10 to 15, maybe less, a little more, that were real active. They showed up for trainings. They did, of course, back then we didn't have shifts. We just relied on the pager and the pack set. And then, but there was definitely people that pick and choose.
Thanks.
So this is not new.
Okay, I think this is probably an ongoing discussion, like all of our things at the moment. There's a lot of things as a new board we're getting to grips with. I'm sure we have some ideas of how to visualize that a little bit better and understand it. But we are a combination department. We do rely on volunteers, and obviously there's a finite pool that we can pull from. So I think the outcome of this whole discussion really is how we best utilize that pool and how we best engage them. So Chief, I'll talk to you about Firehouse and see what we can pull out of that. And yes, I do understand this is not a new thing. So more an ongoing a golden situation, I think. I just dropped an item from new business. Time's ticking on. I'm aware of everybody's time. I kind of stuffed this agenda a little bit, and we can push my last item off till next month. Anybody else have any new business they'd like to discuss? Or any further comments? Okay. For public still present on the call, has anybody got anything they'd like to add to the discussions that occurred? Anything they'd like to ask the board to look at? I will take that as a no. I think we pretty much covered any other business. We covered a lot of business here this evening. We do not have the necessity for a special executive session. I have a note on special executive sessions, though. Chief sent me a very interesting court case, which I think was just adjudicated, regarding special executive sessions and what happens if you incorrectly apply the rules. It can go quite horribly wrong. I'll send that to you. It's worth a read. It's probably like a 30-minute read. There's some other background information that is also really interesting, but takes a bit longer. Definitely worth looking at. Not a place we want to end up. So if we when we do need special executive sessions, we need to plan them very carefully. I think was the takeaway from what I read from it. That was for sure. Okay. Next meeting, August the 5th at 7 p.m., I believe, Wednesday there. If that's all the business we have currently, can I get a motion to adjourn the meeting, please?
A motion to adjourn.
And a second.
A second.
Henry, are you good with us?
I adjourning? Am good. Thank you, Ian. Appreciate it.
And Patrick, are you good? Do you agree we should adjourn?
Patrick's on mute.
I think he dropped out. Okay, let's see. The board agrees to adjourn the meeting. Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you for all your time and effort. I appreciate it. Thank you to the audience that stayed with us through the meeting. And just a message to the audience, if you have anything that you would like the board to consider, or if you have any comments on this evening's meeting, feel free to contact me through the department or through my personal email. My board email is boardpres@nfpd.org. Send me any, if you have any comments that you'd like us to consider. Thank you all. Let's adjourn the meeting at 9:21 p.m.
You all have a good fourth.
Yeah, well, take care. I will talk to you all soon.
Bye.
Good fourth, everybody. Bye.
Sure.
All right, how do I do this?